the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests. And that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. It's a special edition of the show tonight. I'm in the studio with producer Forrest Connor. We have Mr. Mobius here. We have Kuka. We have investigator Shelley Wright. We have Rob from Holland. A great panel of people to discuss all kinds of amazing things. And one of the things that we're sort of focusing on is this Star Knowledge Asheville 2012 conference that recently took place, and our correspondents were Mobius and Kuka. It happened during the fall equinox weekend there, a three-day event. We had our friend Missy Hill on the program beforehand telling everybody about it. And there are so many different topics that were covered. One that I think you found sort of impressive, Mobius, was Trisha McCannon, Lost Years of Jesus. Is that right?
She honored us and took a lot of time to do an interview.
Mm-hmm.
And she just was extremely open and communicated her thoughts very well. I want to shout out and thank to her for how much time she took just to honor us with such a good interview.
And what did you learn?
She essentially fills in the gap of knowledge with the lost times of Jesus. She discusses the possibility if he was married. She mentions the galactic connections. So she kind of looks at an alternative perspective of the mainstream knowledge. And it's just amazing talking to her. She is so unique.
Well, you know, there was a news story recently about some documents that have supposedly been discovered that include the very clear suggestion that Jesus was, in fact, married to Mary Magdalene.
She discussed this.
Okay.
She said the word rabbi would definitely mean he had been married, and she thought the discussion was in retrospect about Jesus, maybe 120 years after, but she did say that Jesus was probably, in her opinion, married, but that did not change his message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, sure, I don't see why it would. I've always felt that, you know, the concept of Jesus, and I say the concept because we were discussing during the break that there are a lot of cultures that predated Jesus that had figures that were very similar to Jesus. And it makes you wonder if the stories about Jesus became sort of intermingled with some of these other cultures. And so we don't know how much of the story of Jesus is fiction versus myth. But the point, I guess, that they all try to get across, including the stories about Jesus, is basically the golden rule, you know, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. It's a peaceful message. And the funny thing, however, is that there is a ton of material related to the Bible that we have never seen, that we may never see, and that's because that long ago, religion was synonymous with government. That was how you controlled people in a very, very violent world. And so I'm sure that things were shifted a little bit here and there in order to make a strong statement protecting those who were in the religious authority positions. Now, Rob, coming so directly from the European lineage, you just have this incredible combination of religious wars that took place on the soil right there in Europe. Nowadays, what is, at least in Holland, the sort of general consensus about Christianity and its relationship to the other sort of European traditions of religion and war?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's. I have to be very, call it diplomatic.
Sure.
Because you know just as well that we have different ideas about a lot of things. And from what I know is how we look at it right now. We have definitely in Europe, the churches are running empty, just as simple as that.
Okay.
More by more. I mean, the Catholic Church is almost gone in Holland.
Really?
Yeah, not in the way that the churches are removed, but I mean, there are there used to be totally covered with people every Sunday, and now there may be 50.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and in the old days, the priest had a lot to say.
Mm-hmm.
They watching television and things like that, make them make an own decision and say, okay, we believe, but we don't go after a religion. A religion is, I mean, I always consider myself that a religion has nothing to do with believing.
Right.
Yeah, I respect everyone who believes in a God. But why would you call it Mohammed or whatever? I've told that story before, I think, even online, about the three people meeting on the street. Remember? No?
Don't.
You want me to repeat
please,
it?
Please, sure.
Okay, there are three guys meeting on the street. There's a Jewish guy, a Muslim guy, and a Christian guy. And they're meeting on the street. The one says, I believe in God. And the other one said, yeah, me too, but his name is Allah. And the other one said, no, you're both wrong. It's Jehovah. And before you know, those three guys are fighting. And that is because of religion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next day, there is no more religion. So three people are meeting each other on the street, and they say, hey, I believe in God. And the other guy says, yeah, me too. And the other said, yeah, I believe in God too, but how do you believe in God? Yeah, before you know, they sit down on the terrace, have a beer, and talk about how they believe.
Right.
And there's no longer a religion that dictates mm-hmm. what to believe mm-hmm. and how to believe.
Mm-hmm.
I always say, if there is a Lord, he has made you intelligent enough to think for yourself. And if the Bible is that guideline, then the Lord has made you clever enough to understand what is in the Bible.
Right.
And you don't need some person to tell you what you should believe or how you should believe. Mm-hmm. Because that is up to you. I mean, is there any word in the Bible about building a church? Or having someone telling you what or how to understand what's in the Bible?
Right.
Absolutely not.
Right.
I mean, I read the Bible. I actually also took the time to read a translation of the Quran. I also had the Torah translated, read. So I know what I'm talking about in this matter. There is no one in either one of the books, anyone that says you have to follow someone who is going to teach you how to believe.
Yeah.
Believing is something that you do with your heart, and there's no reason for you to... I mean, there you got some churches here that I actually like. You have people from different directions going to that same church.
Right.
They don't have a priest saying you have to do this or that. They're actually discussing things.
Well, it seems like if there is one ultimate truth, then many paths should be able to lead
Absolutely.
To that one ultimate
Absolutely,
truth.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so that's why it is interesting to look at these types of stories. Mobius?
Rob essentially summarized everything that was said
yeah.
in Star Knowledge. Divine was said to be internal, and even though there were the gods and the influences, and they used gods in the small case
mm-hmm.
as aliens that contacted us in the past, the message was that there is no end, there's only the future, and it's only positive, but that positivity is made inside of yourselves, and that everything is infinitely possible, and that we are beginning the journey into a deeper part of the spirit, and that there is no disaster, there's no impending doom, there's only the glory of a new tomorrow.
Well, you know, I was having a conversation with our friend Dean Worsing recently, and Dean was talking about how that in his lifetime alone, we have shifted consciousness. You know, we don't behave the same way that we did 50 years ago or 40 years ago or 30 years ago. People are more sympathetic to other people's points of view. And at least I believe that's the case because, look, there was a time when, you know, in this country we had slaves here. We don't have slaves anymore. There was a time when women couldn't vote here. Women can vote now. There was a time when, you know, parenting was drastically different, for example. And so we are sort of shifting toward, I think, a more sympathetic and compassionate point of view by and large, which is a very good thing. And I wonder if that is what's necessary for us to make the next technological leap as well, to be able to open our minds and have it shift the same way. Recently, Shelley gave me a very interesting book that she found. I haven't read the whole book yet, but it's about a doctor who in the 1950s somehow hitched a ride on a UFO. And so I was reading through some of the passages, and I'm sure this is something that will come up more on a future program. But whether it's true or not, anytime a guy says, yeah, I've been on a UFO and I met some aliens, you wonder, well, what did they say? And he says that the alien said to him, everything that you know about science and physics is actually one of the lower branches of science. And you believe that's the entire tree. And that's why you're limited in how far you can progress. Once you realize that this is a branch of the tree, and you start looking at the tree instead, then you'll be amazed at how simple things become, and we complicate things unnecessarily. And maybe that is what we're heading toward. It began as an emotional shift, as a humanitarian shift, and hopefully that will work its way into a technological shift, meaning that we can all live satisfying physical lives without having to kill ourselves over it and go to war over resources and ideologies. So sounds like that's right in line with what the topic was there, the Star Knowledge Asheville Conference there. Well, speaking of ways to reach that, you know, you have a note here about sacred geometry. That's something I'm really interested in because it makes us wonder if sacred geometry is in fact a part of technology from ancient times that was designed to channel energies that we need to rediscover once again. Tell us more about what you learned regarding sacred geometry.
Steve Pitt also did an amazing interview, and he had copper tubing on display, helical strands of DNA, three-dimensional, that were just beautiful. Also, some of the crop circles he had turned into three-dimensional representations. And he took about 15 or 20 minutes with us. And it's just an amazing interview where he shows us the geometry and how it reflects the inner divine. Once again, this message just kept coming through from everyone.
Okay, we'll take a break. When we come back, I'd like to talk to you some about vortex energy and what this big labyrinth was all about. I mean, you have a huge piece of property there that you guys were using. It was all at your disposal. Somebody had created a labyrinth. I'm especially interested in this because I was recently researching labyrinths myself. There's a local facility, I won't say where it is right now, that has a big labyrinth. And I started researching the history of labyrinths. They're very intriguing. In the earliest times, in prehistoric times, it seems like they were even used to sort of trap malevolent spirits. And over time, the role was reversed to help you meditate and sort of increase your own spirit's ability to sort of soar and connect with the universe. So, hey, how new agey is all this getting, folks? We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
Yeah.
explores the summit of man's enlightenment and, yes, the pit of his dark depravity. We will get to that part soon enough during the Dark 30 Hour. We look at both ends of the spectrum on this show. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. And we're talking about a lot of things here that could bring the mind and soul and our world and technology into harmony. You know, there are a lot of people in this country right now who are out of power. We've had great weather around here, but it's not that way everywhere. And that's one of the reasons that, especially now that you're here in the studio, Mobius, we're so proud that we offer folks the Sunshine Simple solar generator for the home. It's a generator that we co-created. It is a generator that is the most powerful of its kind for the price. We talk about it all the time. People can go to sunshinesimple.com and watch a free demonstration of how it works. But we're going to give everybody a little heads up. We've been selling these things for almost a year, I guess, right? It wasn't around last fall we started providing these?
Yes.
And we have done our best to provide free shipping. But, you know, the world's changing. Gas has kept going up. Some of our shipping costs are changing. And we're going to have to reevaluate everything come November 1st. And we might not be able to pay free shipping anymore. We're trying to figure out how to keep the cost low. But we want to give everybody a heads up. If you want to get one of these generators with free shipping at the current price, better get one before November 1st. Would you say that's fair to say, Mobius?
Yes. We're going to have to look carefully and figure out the shipping.
Yeah, and we tell everybody, don't take our word for it. Go do your own research. Look up the other generators and other options and see for yourself that, you know, we're offering the best product for the best price. And people who do that contact us and say, wow, you weren't kidding. We thought you were just guys on the radio trying to hawk something that had to be a rotten deal. But no, they find out for themselves it's true.
Yeah, it's a good product, too. I love the email that we get from people who are satisfied.
Mobius has spilled his blood in many of those units, personally.
That is true.
Yes.
We also have the Sunshine Junior. It is a unique unit. It's $895. It is using a 400-watt supply and an 85-watt solar panel. And this is brand new. I don't think we have sold one yet. It's so new. And I highly suggest people who want a small 400-watt backup for emergencies. It's great for running your netbook, your cell phones, communication devices. It's amazingly light, versatile. It can be taken camping. And we have this now. I don't think anybody else has anything even like it out there.
So, you know, sunshinesimple.com, maybe someday we will be able to tap into some universal cosmic free energy like vortex power. In the meantime, this is the best you're going to get, sunshinesimple.com. When you were at the conference, people were talking about vortex energy, and there was a labyrinth laid out all around this huge, like, 30-acre property. Isn't that right?
The entire ceremonies were built around it, yes.
Okay, so now Kuka, now you have actually done research on labyrinths and how they apply to human psychology and whatnot. What are some of your thoughts on the labyrinth you found there at the Star Knowledge Asheville Conference?
Well, I walked through it myself, and what I sort of experienced was just, it was very calming. I felt very relaxed. It was outside. So it was very nice, but what I understand about labyrinths is that they are commonly used in psychology to help treat insanity and schizophrenia. Because from what I understand, usually with these patients, not both hemispheres of their brain aren't specifically connected anymore. For some, you know, due to different reasons, it will be either severed or, you know, it doesn't communicate. And what this does is they're having to focus to stay in between the lines as they're walking. So it's connecting both of the hemispheres of the brain as they're walking, and it's also a motorized experience. So they're also using their body at the same time while focusing on this, so it helps to balance out the brain.
So clearly this is physiologically beneficial for anybody to go through one of these labyrinths. And just to clarify, a lot of people, rightfully so, are a little bit confused about the difference between a labyrinth and a maze. And that's because that thousands of years ago, the term labyrinth and maze were used synonymously. The earliest labyrinths were, in fact, mazes that were designed to confuse you. And that's why, that, as I mentioned before the break, some of the prehistoric people, from everything that we've been able to find, were apparently building these labyrinths to confuse and trap evil spirits. And that philosophy even followed us into the earliest historic records. If you look at the ancient Greek myths, there is a story about King Minos of Crete hiring an artificer to create a labyrinth to keep the Minotaur trapped. And, of course, this was a creature with the upper body, of particularly the head of a bull, and the lower body of a man, and it was a monster. He would devour humans, and so the labyrinth was created to confuse him. Interestingly enough, however, around the Middle Ages, for sort of unknown reasons, the Christian church adopted the concept of the labyrinth as a design that was not intended to confuse, but instead reverse the spiritual energy to turn it into a positive tool of enlightenment. And so when we now talk about labyrinths, we talk about what is essentially a pathway designed as sort of concentric connected rings, and you walk this singular path around and around, back and forth, until you reach a central location. It kind of represents circumnavigating the universe and finding a point of divine balance right in the middle, at which you can join with superior spiritual forces. And so nowadays we think of the maze as what you find in the back of the newspaper when you're, you know, playing games and trying to find your way out. But the labyrinth that you're talking about was a singular path that was circular in nature, right?
Yes.
And so what was the reaction you saw from most people at this conference when they entered this maze and had this experience?
A lot of different reactions, I would say. Some of them seem to be more of in a meditative state,
mm-hmm.
while as others seem to sort of be hurried through it.
Right.
Others, I guess maybe took it as a great chance to practice their Tai Chi and things throughout the labyrinth.
Yeah, sure. So, what do you think of this vortex business, Mobius? Do you believe that there are places that really have energy sort of shooting in and out of the earth?
In the center of the maze we're used was the crystal grid, and it was the focal point of the entire ceremony. And the whole idea of the ceremony was indeed vortexes and people mentally moving these vortexes. I'm very left brain, so it's very hard for me to grasp this. But after the experiences there and with the night vision I saw afterwards, I had to walk away, you know, scratching my head and going, what just happened? So, yeah, it changed my mind somewhat, the experiences. I'm not sure how I can answer you, because I'm still trying to figure out what it is I experienced.
After our next break, we're going to talk about the UFO encounter you had there. But briefly, you know, Shelley Wright, you're a sensitive person. You got around Carville the alien. You felt something lifelike inside of him. You've also been around crystal skulls. Do you think crystal skulls are alive, Shelley?
You know, I really didn't have a reaction to the crystal skulls the way a lot of people do, but I did around Carville the alien.
Maybe the wooden skull phenomenon plays a role as well, I actually think that, you know, wood, it was once living, so wouldn't it make more sense for a wooden skull to have some life energy?
Sure.
Why not?
Why not?
Explains everything. When we come back, you're going to hear about some wild UFO activity that Mobius and Kuka experienced at the Star Knowledge Asheville Conference. It's the program where we dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the extraordinary, the downright weird. Keeping you company tonight Thanks for spending your evening with us. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Sprain. Joshua P. Warren in the studio with a great panel, an international panel of broadcasters this evening. And we're exploring a lot of territory here. And it's one thing to go to a place where there's a conference, speakers are arranged, everything is somewhat staged and planned. It's another thing to be there and then absolutely unpredictable, crazy stuff starts to erupt. You know, it reminds me, not too long ago, of course, the motion picture that we worked on called The Apparition came out. And one night, everybody in this studio, with the exception of Rob from Holland, we all got together and we went to the theater to watch this together. And it was only maybe a day later that reports started coming into us from people who had no idea that we were together in that theater of UFOs flying around above the theater. You were the one who brought this to my attention, Mobius.
Yeah, it was nuts. It was amazingly nuts, but it was fun.
Well, you know, of course, that's one of those things that makes you wonder if you get the right group of people together in the right mindset. Does it attract this stuff? Does it create this stuff? Well, you experienced something at the Star Knowledge Asheville Conference that seems to possibly reinforce that it does have some correlation, right?
Yes. We had, on two nights, just bizarre experiences. I remember thinking about Chief Golden Light Eagle and his Indian knowledge of the elders. And I was thinking about this. And so I was with Missy Hill, and she runs Night Vision X, where she provides night vision goggles that we have sold her, high-end, third-generation, select alpha goggles for people to look at the night sky. And so I went with her in case she needed any help. Being experienced, I could make sure everybody was having the best experience. And I turned these on. I was the first one to initiate the pair, looked up, and I knew that something bizarre was happening. There were just objects moving around the sky at like one horizon to another one in a quarter of a second, objects colliding into each other looking like they were exploding and then disappearing, things moving around the sky instantly, doing 180-degree instant shifts on themselves. Maybe 100 objects over two nights that I saw.
Wow.
And it was like the sky was alive with just insanity. I have never seen anything like some of the things I saw. Now, I would like to debunk, because I like to be very logical with birds or insects, and removing everything that I might be able to explain, there is just so much that I saw that I cannot debunk mentally anyway. It's just insanity, especially the two objects from far into the sky coming together, colliding, making a flash, and disappearing. I simply don't know what was going on that night. It was insane.
Well, and of course, that is especially amazing because, for one thing, the chances of two meteors or something like that happening to be entering on sort of horizontal trajectories from opposite sides and aligning perfectly to strike each other would be so astronomical, no pun intended, that, I mean, you're talking about next to impossible that you would witness something like that. So that means that if they're going to actually be on the same latitude, they would need to be almost controlled.
Right.
Like these are two guys who are heading for each other, or these are two objects that were accidentally put on the same plane, something like that. So right off the bat, you're ruling out a lot of natural explanations, but clearly, they exploded into each other.
We also, over and over again, saw objects that would appear on the far horizon
mm-hmm.
and move to the opposite side of the sky. And I would doubt that they exceeded a quarter of a second to travel the full length of the sky. And this happened not once, but maybe eight times. So we had multiple pair of goggles, and everybody was seeing the same thing. We were all tracking, we were calling it, we were watching it, and we all shared the same exact, vision is not the right word, perspective. Everybody was just shocked. No one had ever seen anything like this. And I can't help but think that probably there was some connection. It was almost like the Indians said they call these things down and that they would be there. So sure enough, something was going on.
Kuka, did you see any of this?
I didn't see the specific one that he's talking about, but mm-hmm. I did witness some kind of object. It sort of went from my lower perspective towards my upper perspective, and I had to move my head up to be able to follow it through the night vision, and it kind of did like a U-turn and went back down where it came from.
And so that looked like something unnatural to you.
Yeah, because it did a U-turn.
Well, now, for those who are listening, if you've never been to paratemporal.com and you want to see some footage that gives you an idea of the kind of thing we're talking about, go to paratemporal.com and check it out and check out some of the reports. One thing that's so interesting about the night vision there is that many people do not realize the night vision technology that was pioneered by the Americans is considered so superior that it is against the law to take it outside of the United States. And that is because it's considered a security issue regarding our intellectual property. We don't want this to fall into the hands of our enemies. On the other hand, if you're here from another country, it's perfectly fine to look through a pair of night vision goggles. So, Rob, since you are from Europe, you've now looked through night vision goggles many times here.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen anything outstanding?
Yeah, what we call jumpers, I think. That's the best description for it. You see a point that is definitely different from the rest of what you see in the sky, and from one second to another, it jumps
mm-hmm.
to another location. And I've seen quite a few of those things happen, and also that they simply disappear in the distance. Just like that, from boom, and they gone. You see them really so fast that you have to realize this has to be something more than a satellite flying over, a plane or whatever, or a bird. It's very impressive. I saw it for the first time, I think about 4 years ago, that Danny Mobius showed me, and I was really impressed the first time. I said, okay, this is so cool.
Now, have you ever looked through night vision goggles in Europe that are obviously not American versions?
There are plenty of American versions.
Yeah, well, they're not supposed to be, but yeah.
No, but there have been, of course, a lot of soldiers from Holland has also been fighting in Iraq. And
absolutely, yeah. It's easy to bring those things back.
Regardless, yeah.
So, but have you looked through versions in Europe that don't show you that level of detail?
The problem is what they show is we have a very cloudy sky. We have a lot of light pollution.
Oh, right.
So it's you really have to find a place where you can use them, and that is the hardest part.
Yeah.
Even when I would go to the beach, I still have in the background the light coming from the greenhouses, for instance, that are lighted up all night to make the plants believe it's day.
Yeah.
But it also makes it a little bit hard for you to see stars even, and it interferes tremendously with light vision.
I think maybe something like last year, there was a really interesting documentary on the History Channel, and I think it was called something like Afraid of the Dark. And it was about the world before electrical lighting and how we really don't think ourselves about just how different the experience was of living in a world without electrical lighting, how that, you know, nighttime was perceived so dramatically different. And that if you look at planet Earth as a whole, we now have so many electrical lights that, you know, the whole Earth is glowing to such an extent that you really can't go anywhere on the planet and see it as dark as it was, we'll say, 150 years ago. But there is one spot that is still the darkest spot, and it's in Africa. It's just some place in the middle of nowhere in Africa. And I find it, you know, intriguing. You can look at statistics on the population of a state or a city or whatever, but if you just look at a nighttime image and you see where the lights are, it gives you a much clearer understanding of where the people are, where the civilization is.
No, believe me, if you are on the middle of the ocean, you go from Africa to Brazil in this case, and you follow them in the equator.
Mm-hmm.
And we were halfway when we had a failure of power on the board of the ship. And believe me, in the middle of the night, without the sun, the moon was actually, what you call it? There was no moon that day.
New moon?
New moon. So, believe me, then it's dark.
Yeah, yeah.
You even have a hard time seeing your own hand. I mean, so I think there are more darker places than Africa. Africa is dark, no doubt about it.
All right, well, we're going to take a break. We come back. Yes, folks, we have some new news about new zombie attacks. This was not just some little bump in the current events that we passed beyond. We're going to tell you about the new zombie attacks when we return. And then, of course, very soon, it will be the hour of the show when we talk about the more outrageous and controversial material. Not for everybody, okay? It's not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. We call that Dark 30. And fittingly enough, so that's all coming up very soon. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual. It's Speaking of Strange. Of Strange, coming up next hour, we call it the Dark 30 Hour. Some of you might just want to turn off the radio. Come back later with something more family friendly on. And that's when we dig into the more controversial, outrageous material. But here in the final minutes, first off, I want to definitely thank both of you, Mobius and Kuka, for being our correspondents at Star Knowledge Asheville 2012. I know there's more to talk about, but I'm kind of excited to see when the footage is going to be available, however that works out. And then we'll get you guys back on when people can actually see the footage and all this will make more sense. But I've got to get to some of these new zombie attack stories. I mean, we have had such a field day with these stories. And, you know, Mobius, you and I have had a lot of conversations about just what the hell is going on. I mean, it's one thing for a person to just flip out and do something violent. But we know what the pattern is. It's often a man, he gets naked, and he starts acting like an animal. He's out of his mind. And at first, when this was happening, people wanted to believe that these were guys on drugs, because that is some way of logically justifying it. Some of them are not on any drugs at all, so there's something else happening. Here's one from Holly, Pennsylvania. A naked, bloody man broke into a home, jumped from a two-story window, tackled a passerby, and chewed on her head while, quote, screaming like an animal, end quote. They say this gory scene unfolded there in Holly, Pennsylvania. It was a 20-year-old man. This happened about 5 o'clock in the morning. That's when it sort of began. This guy drove his car off the road behind some houses in this small town, and that's when he stripped off his clothes. He tried and failed to break into a nearby home. He ended up fleeing up the street, broke into another home. This sort of thing went on until he finally jumped from one of the windows. He was injured. They say he severely injured his arms and extremities, but it didn't matter. He kept going. So now imagine this. The guy's naked. He's pouring blood. He's all kind of twisted and broken up. And there were two women walking on the street, and he just lurches on one and, again, screaming like an animal, begins gnawing and chewing on her head. The woman escaped, called the police. They found the guy lying on the road, displaying, quote, delusional behavior. They were hitting him with the taser. Didn't matter. He managed to punch an officer in the face. They finally got the guy arrested, taken into custody, but they don't know what the heck was going on. It's unclear if he was on drugs or anything else, but he's facing a lot of charges. Now we go to Kansas City, Missouri. Here's a story about a couple with a baby in the back seat going down the interstate, I-70. Suddenly, boom, there's a man in the middle of the road who looks like he's out of it. They hit the man. They had no choice. And they thought they'd killed him. They got out of the car, says, quote, it looked like he was dead on the road, flat and everything, end quote, said the woman. So, you know, the woman's freaking out. So she goes over trying to help him. Amazingly enough, the man gets up. He completely disregards her, staggers over to the car, even though he's badly injured and bloody, opens the car, reaches in, and grabs the baby. Okay? Grabs the baby, a one-month-old named Emily. Fortunately, you know, the father's there. So the father, you know, he comes out and jerks the baby away, pushes the man away. They get the cops involved. This guy has been now taken into custody. They still don't know what was wrong with him. Some people say they think maybe he was high on PCP or something. Again, it makes you question, is this just a natural phenomenon and not something drug-induced? It's looking more and more like that. And as if that weren't enough. You know, we talked earlier on this show, I guess maybe it's been probably a couple months maybe now, about how the CDC was putting out a warning for people on how to deal with a zombie apocalypse. And, of course, when you go to the website, it's at first presented very seriously, and then they're kind of like, oh, well, of course we're joking. Yeah, nod, nod, wink, wink. Now, the military and law enforcement are getting ready. Training is going to begin. A security firm called Halo Corporation has announced that about 1,000 military personnel, police officials, medical experts, and federal workers will learn the ins and outs of a zombie apocalypse as part of an annual counter-terrorism summit. And once again, oh, yeah, well, it's just for fun, you know, it's all tongue-in-cheek, they say. They are claiming it is possible that a zombie-like virus outbreak would just be an ideal training scenario, and so they're going to learn how to deal with worldwide pandemic situations where people become crazy, violent, and fearful. And they're thinking right now that when this is enacted, zombies are going to be roaming the grounds around San Diego, California, harassing troops and first aid teams that will be participating. It goes on and on and on. How serious is this? Well, it's not going away, and the very serious people are involved. So make up your own mind. We're going to take a break. When we come back, it will be time for the Dark 30 Hour. You know what that means. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the program where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange.
Very superstitious. Writings on the wall.